Spirit of the living God, fall afresh on us. Spirit of the living God, fall afresh on me. Oh God, would you speak through me? Would you speak in spite of me? And may the words of my mouth and the meditation of all of our hearts be acceptable to you, O God, for you are our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. So today we are concluding our sermon series on the Ten Commandments. So either we are just relieved or excited. I don't know what we're feeling. I'm feeling relief, but sort of full of just all that we've been talking about over the summer. And so this morning, I wanted to take a time to just kind of walk us through all of them again. And it's not going to take that long, so don't get too anxious. But I wanted to give those of you who have been gone all summer a chance to just get a little taste of what we've been talking about. So my hope has been in this series really to give us an opportunity to look at these old words and find ourselves stirred again, challenged again by them, hearing some new wisdom and teaching for our lives today through the commandments. Because it's not until we really wrestle with the commandments and experience the tension that they bring into our lives that we begin to understand some of the depth that they are, and that depth of the teaching that is in them. And if you remember, perhaps those of you who were here at the very beginning, we talked about how before the commandments were even given to the people of Israel, Moses was talking to the people and he said, "Hear, O people, the statutes and the ordinances I'm going to give to you today." God made a covenant with us. God did not make a covenant with our ancestors, but with us, those of us who are here and we are alive today. And Moses was basically taking the commandments and contextualizing them for the people who were there today. These are not for our ancestors, these are for us. We are in charge. We are interpreting these commandments for our lives today. And so here we are many generations later, receiving those words of Moses. And I think that question is the same for us. Those of us who are alive here today, how do we receive the commandments? How do we struggle with them? And that's what we've been looking at over the summer. So the very first commandment begins not as a commandment at all, but as a statement. God self-identifies God's self. "I am the one who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage." And in rabbinic Judaism, this statement is the first commandment. This self-identification of God as a liberator is important because it frames the rest of the commands. It reminds the people always that God is a God who hears the cries of people in bondage and liberates them and is about liberating them. What does this mean for us today? This means that God is not neutral when it comes to people who are in bondage under empire. God is not neutral when it comes to people who are in bondage under the empire of the United States. God hears the cries of those who are being crushed under our empire. And this becomes the basis for why we today are committed to listening to the voices of immigrants, to people of color, to poor folks, to Muslims who are facing increased discrimination, folks who are GLBTQIA, all the folks who experience the crushing systems of empire. God is not neutral when it comes to those who are experiencing oppression, but stands on their side and works for their liberation. So this first word from God as a liberator of the people means that we are to mirror that God in our work as liberating people, people who are about liberation. So this first statement is very important. The second commandment is related to the first. "You shall have no other gods before me, or make for yourself an idol." Now, idolatry, we've talked about, is a major problem for us. Many things, people, systems can become our idols. Idolatry is when something or someone takes a hold of your heart and becomes the center of your worship. Sometimes without knowing it at first, we can become obsessed or our hearts can be captivated by something or someone. We can worship our phones, our television, our jobs, our wealth, our social status, our relationships, our own piety, our righteousness. We can worship our whiteness. Your allegiance to these things or people in the end have a way of destroying us. And idolatry is ultimately what destroys us, and it destroys our neighbor. Finding true freedom in life and joy demands that we take a close look at those idols in our lives. So we moved on to the third commandment, which is don't use God's name wrongfully. Don't take the name of the Lord your God in vain. This commandment is concerned with truth. The commandment is not primarily about using bad language or curse words. The commandment is concerned that we don't take God's name and use it without a concern for truth. So when somebody says, for example, God hates you, or God told me that you're going to hell, this is a way of taking God's name in vain, because you're using God's name to hurt someone and without a concern for truth. I bet if all of us counted for 1 week how many times we heard a politician or a religious leader take the name of God in vain, we could probably fill a whole book full of our examples. And using God's name wrongfully can do some serious damage to our spirits and bodies. In fact, I think many of us here are perhaps recovering in different ways from the ways that we've been hurt by people using God's name wrongfully. Now, I'm going to skip a little bit over to the ninth commandment, because the ninth commandment is also concerned with truth. Do not bear false witness against your neighbor. We talked about this last week. And I shared last week that when I was first coming out, I had a great deal of condemnation in my own heart toward myself. I believe that that condemnation in my heart was a way of bearing false witness against myself. In time, I realized that this condemnation in my heart was not from God. It was false witness, a lie I came to believe about myself because of the false witnessing of others. We can come to believe lies about ourselves and other people and about God. And it's part of our ongoing work as a people and a community to walk in love and in truth and to tell the truth about God and each other and ourselves. So the third commandment and the ninth are closely related because they are concerned about truth. And we moved on to talk about the importance of rest in our lives with keeping the Sabbath holy. We remember that we serve a God who rests and has created rest as a necessary part of the fabric of our lives. It is a matter of life and death that we rest, that our land, that our earth rests. The hurricanes, as Chris mentioned earlier, and we were praying and we've been thinking about, the hurricanes we're seeing today of such devastating magnitude are in ways related to the years upon years of our disobedience to this commandment. We have not allowed the land, people, creation to rest. Our greed and our market-driven economy scoffs at this commandment. There's no time for rest. So part of the call of the commandment around keeping the Sabbath holy is to reclaim rest, to cease our incessant working and our addiction to productivity, and to reclaim rest as part of what we need for ourselves and for others and for all of creation. And we moved on then to the fifth commandment. We talked about family relationships, particularly our relationships with our parents, which are often complicated. Honor your parents is the fifth commandment. And with this commandment, it became important for us to understand what the word honor means. Honor is different than obeying your parents. Honor doesn't mean the same thing as obedience. It also doesn't mean that you even have affection for your parents. The Jewish sages have taught us that it's different. To honor is really to give value to your parents, to give weight to them. And when your parents, which this commandment is speaking to adults, when your parents are aging and are no longer considered, quote, productive or, quote, useful in our society that is market-driven, the commandment wants us to honor their value and their worth that is not tied to their ability to produce. That is really the force of this, of the fifth commandment, and as you can see, it's related to the Sabbath. We spoke about how it's related to the Sabbath in that we don't value people based on what they can produce. So we also spoke, though, and it's important to mention this, that in this commandment to honor your parents, it is not ever asking you or asking us to honor abuse if you have experienced that abuse from your parents or are experiencing that now. To honor your parents may mean that you rise above them in the way that you act and in what you decide. You can take the sorrow and the pain that you carry in relationship to your parents, and when you turn that into compassion, that can be a way of honoring your parents by being essentially not like them, to rise above them. That is also an interpretation and important to talk about when we talk about honoring. It doesn't mean obedience. And it doesn't mean even to have affection for them. When Heather and I preached on the sixth commandment together, do not kill, and we spoke about how this commandment on not killing is really much broader and deeper than at first glance. There are many ways, we said, that we can be killing each other. Heather, in her sermon, mentioned trying to pass a health care law that would strip 20 million people of health insurance, including the poorest in our nation. Could this be a violation of the commandment, she asked. And we said yes, because to take away health care from the poor is essentially a death sentence. So do not kill really gets at some of the deeper struggles we have, the systems that we have in place that are killing us. Similarly, the seventh commandment against adultery is one that gets at our deep struggles. Jesus, we find in this commandment, or at least I find, is particularly helpful in helping us interpret the commandment on adultery. And he brings it close to home. He says that adultery starts with the eyes, and it begins with how you look at people. When people become relegated to things to be consumed or exploited or objectified, Jesus says adultery has already taken place. And we have all participated in this. Degrading and shaming begins with our eyes. And when we do things like stand up to harassment or speak out when someone is shamed, when we listen to and amplify the voices of those who are gender nonconforming, who are often victims of sexual harassment, we are living in obedience to this command. The eighth commandment, we're getting through them, right? See, isn't this fun? Going through the Ten Commandments. The eighth commandment, do not steal. We entertain the idea that all of us are thieves the moment we are born, especially us white folk. This commandment, do not steal, is not simply asking us whether we've stolen something today, taking a little extra something from the bin at Weaver's Way, sampling it. Weaver's Way is a co-op that I shop at. Sometime in the past, I took something from the Weaver's Way bin because I wanted to sample it, and I wondered, am I stealing? Anyway, that's something I should ask myself and think about probably. But that is not primarily what this commandment is concerned about, that kind of stealing. I think what the force of the commandment, do not steal, is really asking us to think deeply about how we are living in a market system built on theft. Corporate theft is legal and legitimate in our country. And I talked about in this sermon how, as a person classified as white, I have privileges and access to wealth in part because I am still benefiting today from stolen labor, from stolen land that my ancestors took, from stolen people from Africa. Unpaid and forced labor have created the foundations of our market-driven economy, and it thrives on legalized theft. And so one way to think about obeying this commandment is to think about what it means for me and for us as a community to give back what we've stolen, or at least to put limits on what we will take and what we will acquire. And I entertained the idea in that sermon of our small community here at TAB doing an act of reparation sometime in the near future. And we'll take some time in the coming time to talk about this. This commandment on stealing is closely related to the final commandment, number 10. Do not covet your neighbor's house, your neighbor's wife, their field, their servants, their ox, and their donkey, or anything that belongs to them. Of course, we need to remember that in the context in which this was written, wives and servants were considered possessions. Thanks be to God for God's continuing revelation to us. We do not believe this anymore about human beings. At least ideologically, we don't. No human being is to be possessed or owned by another. But at its core, this 10th commandment against coveting is about having an extreme desire for something so much that you are moved to take it. So the language there for coveting is very strong. It's not, it is about your desire, but it comes very close to you taking. So it's really connected to greed. It's kind of about greed, having that strong desire, and yet you are so moved by that desire that you will take something that doesn't belong to you. So you can see how that last commandment with related to greed is connected to stealing as well. And we know that all we have to do is live in this culture to understand our struggle with coveting. We thrive on it. We thrive on greed. Every billboard, every advertisement you see, people will tell you regularly that you don't have enough. You can always take more. You deserve it. Have one more thing and then you'll be satisfied. And this, again, is a recipe for death. It brings death to ourselves and to our neighbor. And it is precisely this death of community, of neighbor love, that all of the commandments are concerned about. The 10th commandment brings us back full circle. It takes us back to the beginning, that life under Yahweh's rule ensures that everyone has enough and what they need. But in order for us all to have enough and what we need, we must stop thinking about ourselves as individuals detached from one another. Rather, our whole worldview must shift as we consider the reality and presence of our neighbor, always. Our connectivity to our neighbor, always. It's never me first. It's never America first. That is the most anti-Christian thing I have ever heard. And that's wrong. The commandments speak to this. It's never about me first. It's always about neighbor care. The commandments are concerned about that always. So the question for us is always, who is my neighbor? Who is suffering? How can I help to shoulder it, prevent it, maybe even alleviate it? To love your neighbor, this is hard for us, I think. To love your neighbor means that your freedoms will be curbed. There are limits to what you can take and have within God's rule. Our individual freedoms are restricted and they're corrected because Yahweh's liberating rule is not just about me. It's about my neighbor and particularly my most vulnerable neighbor. Paul sums it up for us. Moses did, the prophets did, Jesus did. They all said, all of these commandments can be summed up in one word. You must love your neighbor as yourself, and love does no wrong to a neighbor. So that sums it up. And yet we know we struggle with love. To struggle to love is the struggle to obey the Ten Commandments. They are connected. This love that we talk about, this biblical love, the gospel love that sums up all the commandments, is not for the faint of heart. This is a love that is sometimes costly. It sometimes is about making real sacrifices in our lives. And ultimately, we believe that that love takes the pattern of Jesus' life, this dying to the ways of the world, losing your life in order to gain it, resisting being conformed to the ways of the world that are death-dealing, and being transformed by the vision and power of God's liberating reign. The commandments are for us, those of us who are here alive today. And we know what time it is. Paul said it. The hour has already come for you to wake up from your sleep. Now our salvation is nearer than when we first had faith. The night is almost over. The day is near. Let's get rid of the actions that belong to darkness and put on the weapons of life, of light. Let us love the Lord our God, the one who brought us out of the land of Egypt. Let us love the Lord our God with all our hearts, with all our minds, with all our strength, and our neighbor as ourselves. Amen. Amen.